So we are holding on Sadiq Dawood on the bay, 10 lines from the 9 lines from the top line against Rava. Okay, we've discussed, the Gemara has been discussing the idea that the question of whether leather can have kibbutz done to it, where kibbutz means that, you know, not just rinsing it with water, but actually cleaning it, like laundering it. So we were discussing a machlokes between the Chachamim and Acherim on that subject. Then Rava had mentioned a distinction maybe between hard and soft leather. We ended up saying like this, that Rava says that kibbutz requires also kiskus. It requires also not just that you're washing it with water and detergents and whatever, but also that you're rubbing one part against the other. Scrubbing, basically, yeah. So without that, it can't be called kibbutz. So in the case of a leather pillow that we were talking about yesterday, even if it's soft, then you can pour water on it to get rid of filth that's on it, and that won't be an issue because in order for it to be considered kibbutz, in order to be doing the malacha of kibbutz, you would actually have to be scrubbing.
We changed the definition of kibbutz.
We said, first we thought that kibbutz, so what we said was like this. We ended up saying that there's three different cases. Cloth, just putting water on it itself, already constitutes kibbutz. Because cloth absorbs water and the way of washing it is with water. Soft leather, in order for it to be kibbutz, you would have to have kiskus, hello? You would have to have that you're rubbing it as well, that you're scrubbing it. And then you have hard leather where there would be a machloikas between the Chachamim and Acherim on that subject when it comes to hard leather. Where you would have the Chachamim saying that you could even, the Chachamim would be saying that even that hard leather you could even scrub, and Acherim would say you could rinse it but not scrub it. So the last thing we said was that on the other hand, that's all as far as leather, whereas when it comes to cloth, then just pouring water on it itself already constitutes kibbutz, even if you don't scrub it, and therefore,
right?
So therefore, when it comes to cloth, on the other hand, then just putting water on it itself is kibbutz. So that's where we're holding. 9 lines from the top of Sadiq Dawood on the base. So the Gemara says, Rava l'tanya, Rava is going according to his own svara. Ya'amar Rava, because you find that Rava says, Rava sudur l'mayim chayim. If somebody were to throw a sudur, a turban or other piece of cloth, into water on Shabbos, then he'd be chayav for kibbutz. With the provision that we mentioned yesterday, Tosfos says that when you're getting the thing wet, not in the way of cleaning it, but rather in a way of getting it dirty, like wiping your hands on a towel, that's different. But here we're talking about where you're throwing it into water in order to get it clean. But then that would be also. And also, by the way, Rava says another din, Zorak Pishtan Lamayim Chayim. Also, Rava says, if you were to throw flax seed into water, a person would do that on Shabbos, he'd also be Chayim for being Machal Shabbos.
Flax seed.
No, but that's what we have to figure out. The Shlena Sudr, I can understand what the problem would be with the Sudr of kibbutz, because he'd be doing kibbutz, because he just established that putting it in water, according to Rava, which is in fact the halacha, would be considered kibbutz. I will bet up Hishtan my time. What's the problem with flax seed? So you're going to answer, because if the flax seeds in water, they're going to start growing, and therefore it's not a malacha of kibbutz, fine, but where Rava is mentioning, because of the similarity of throwing things in water, where here would be a malacha of zereya, of planting. The problem with that is, in that case, why is he mentioning that for flax seed? He should mention also wheat or barley, it would be the same issue. The answer is, hanach itlahu view. The difference is that flax seeds have a kind of mucus on them. So therefore, when you put them in water, then this mucus causes them to stick together. So the issue is not so much that they're growing. Now, so you have some post-skim discuss this and say apparently the Gemara seems to be saying that just putting them in water by itself would actually not be an Isser Shabbos, as would wheat and barley, that is, wouldn't be an Isser Shabbos, because apparently the Gemara is saying that only if it's a flax seeds, then you have a problem that they join together, they stick together, and therefore you have a different halacha losh. Some of the other posts, including I think the Magen Avraham, say that no, there still could be a problem putting it in water, but the distinction is that with wheat or barley or whatever, it would have to be that you're soaking them in water for a while, long enough for them to start sprouting. As opposed to a flax seed, in other words, if you were just to put wheat or barley in water for a minute or two, that wouldn't be an issue, because they're not going to start sprouting that fast. And therefore, you could do that in order to soften them for animals or whatever. As opposed to dead up fish gun, you have a different issue. The problem is not that it's going to start growing. The problem is that it sticks together.
What's all this connection to kibbutz?
Because Rava mentioned one case of putting something in water where a person is high of malacha, is high of for breaking Shabbos, just for having put it in water. So he's mentioning another example where just by putting something in water, a person is doing a malacha. Yeah. So the question is, if you're going to say that, anything that you put in water that has this mucus-like stuff that causes them to stick together, then a person is high of for breaking Shabbos, high of process for it, then you should say the same thing about raw skins. Raw animal skins have the same kind of thing. They also have this mucus-like stuff attached to that comes out of them and causes them to stick together when you put them in water. Why isn't he saying there's a malacha involved with that also? Tosfos brings a girsa, not shlochim, but shachlayim, which is a type of seed, which is a type of vegetable. We had shachlayim before.
We did, yeah.
Okay. So anyway, so the question is, why? We sometimes mention, the Gemara mentions elsewhere that in Sicori, I think it is, they used to put that in, just the opposite. No, what the Gemara says over there is that they put beans or peas or whatever into vinegar and call that shachlayim because they couldn't afford the real thing. Okay, whatever, the point is, yeah, shachlayim is a type of a peppery vegetable or something. But anyway, the point is that, why are you saying doubt the flax seeds? The answer is, possum ka'ovid lisha. The problem is, the difference is, that when it comes to flax seeds, the problem is, because they stick together with mucus-like stuff, then you have a tolda of losh. As opposed to, when it comes to skin, yes, they stick together, but you can't really call it lisha. Lisha means that you have a bunch of smaller things that you're making into one big mass, because that's the actual malacha, the av malacha of lisha, is that you take flour and mix it with water and knead it, so you have all the different particles of flour combined together into a dough. So that would be the same thing with flaxseed, with shlochim, with animal skins. You don't really have the same kind of thing. They may stick together because of the water, but they don't actually become one big mess. And then according to Tosfos, with shachlayim, I guess it would be the same thing.
What would be the malacha?
So if they're all sticking together, then you have a malacha of wash. You have a malacha of kneading.
Why?
Because that's the thing. Because you're causing a bunch of separate things to stick. Yeah, you're causing a bunch of separate things to stick together, like when you take flour and water and everything. Now, getting back to the matter of leather and washing it on Shabbos, Dorash Rava gave a drasha and said, "Musa v'chabes mino b'Shabbos." You're allowed to wash a shoe on Shabbos. And l'chabes means, not like we said before, just shichshuch, that just rinsing it with water. L'chabes would mean to actually cleanse it. So the question is, what about this that we quoted a few times in the sugya already, that Rav Chiya Ashi said, "Zimnin sagi and have a ka'im na kamei de Rav." Many times I was standing as a Talmud in front of Rav, serving him. And I rinsed the shoes for him in water when they were dirty, implying shichshuch ein avo kibbutz loy. You're only allowed to do shichshuch, you're not allowed to do kibbutz. So, okay. Oki rova amora alevedor. Well, that's apparently. Apparently. So actually, whether we're talking
about rubber shoes in water.
Rubber is actually a whole different discussion that Achronim have, whether rubber is similar to, whether rubber and plastic and other such modern materials are similar to leather in this regard. There, you have different Achronim as Avni Nezer, Esther talks about it, the Moshe Feinstein talks about it. Some of them say that actually rubber and plastic and things like that, which are completely non-absorbent, unlike leather, which at least absorbs to a certain extent, might be, I think Moshe says on this, for example, they might be even more lenient. You might even be allowed to do kiss with them, even actually scrubbing them because they don't actually absorb. But there's a lot of discussion about it among our friends. Okay. Anyway, but here we're talking about leather. So rubber is saying you're allowed to do kibbutz, but we see that Rav Chiya Ashi did not do kibbutz, he only winced then. So therefore, hoder uki rubber amora ale v'dorosh. So then, right away, rubber set up a maturgam on stand up, because that's what they would do, and they would give a drasha, they'd have a maturgam on to announce everything to the public. V'dorosh, and he gave a new drasha, dvorim sh'amarti lefneichem to'osein yadi. What I said before about that you're allowed to do kibbutz on shoes on Shabbos is wrong. Bram kach amru, rather, what the Chachamim have said is, shichshuch mutter kibbutz aser. Shichshuch is allowed, as Rav Ashi did, but kibbutz is aser. On the side over here, bringing a girsa from Shi'opis, that kaskusi is aser. That what's aser is that the rubbing then. So yeah, there was a great deal of discussion among the poskim about, first of all, among the poskim, and then about as far as how it comes out practically in halakha. I mean, Rava himself mentioned before the idea that kibbutz requires kibbutz. So what is he mentioning over here? Therefore, what is he first thinking that kibbutz is allowed, which would include kibbutz, and then saying that's not. So there is a lot of discussion about it. There's also a discussion in that regard about what the Rambam paskins about it and what Shulchan Aruch paskins about it. One possibility is that there may be still a difference between hard and soft leather in this regard, and therefore that Rava himself may have been unsure whether Rav's shoes that Rav Chiya Ashi was cleaning were hard or soft, because that would make a difference based on what we said before. Another possibility is, right, I mean, Rav was a couple of generations before Rava. The shoes were long since in a landfill by then. Also true, yeah. Anyway, the point is, there's another way of looking at it is that maybe there's a distinction between what's also Daraisa and what's also Drabonim. When Rava said at the top of the Amud that kibbutz requires kiskus, maybe he's talking about on a Daraisa level. But Drabonim, even kibbutz without kiskus, would be also. That's implied somewhat by the fact that the Rambam brings this halacha in the section of Hilchot Shabbos where he talks about dinim Drabonim rather than things Daraisa. So the Rebbe talks about it in Shulchan Aruch, and the Tanach Tzedek discusses it further in the Kedushim. The Mishnah Berurah has a long discussion about it in Bi'u Halacha. So you have the whole question, therefore. So definitely everybody agrees that when it comes to leather, you can rinse it with water. You can pour water on it, whether it's hard or soft. But to do anything more than that, to use any other materials on it, which would constitute kibbutz, let alone to rub it, that is subject to this machlokes of how to understand our Gemara over here. It's also at least Drabonon, and it may even be also Zarat. We're saying shichshuch mutter kibbutz aser. We're saying that shichshuch, to rinse them in water, is mutter kibbutz, but anything beyond that, kibbutz, well, that's the thing. One way of understanding is that Rava is now saying that kibbutz midaraisa maybe requires kiskus, but midarabanan, even kibbutz without kiskus, in other words, you're using water and other materials, but you're not rubbing it, might also be offered. Midarabanan. Then we said in the Mishnah, kibbutz b'mokim kodesh chol, we said that when clothing has to be washed from the blood of kafir. Yeah, so that's the thing. We may have two different definitions of kibbutz, one daraisa and one drabonim. Or, again, another possibility is that we may still be distinguishing between hard and soft leather, where kibbutz would apply to where kibbutz would be also by soft leather, but it would be mutter by hard leather, because hard leather is not really subject to kibbutz. So those are the various possibilities that are growing among the parties.
Rubbing by itself in the locker?
Depends. I mentioned yesterday, that just rubbing leather by itself may be a different malacha, mamachic, smoothing it out. Because there's going to be two different things. If you're doing it with water, if you're rubbing it together with water, then you have a different malacha. Then it's not so much a matter of that you're smoothing out the leather, but it's a matter of that you're cleaning it. You're in a malacha of kibbutz.
You can't properly wash something without rubbing it.
That's the thing. So,
no, but that's fine. Of course you can. But what I'm asking is, since Q-schools is already part of a different...
Okay, number, because, no.
How can we define...
Because...
It can be one of two molecules.
There's also a different how hard we're rubbing, or is it more scraping or whatever. I mentioned yesterday about those shoe scrapers that they have in front of old time shoals, which the alphabet ever talked about and talking about. So that's a different thing. That's scraping. That's not rubbing. The issue with mimetic is more about scraping. Here we're talking about rubbing.
Right.
So rubbing is not necessarily a different halacha. That's what I'm saying. It's more scraping than I misspoke. Wrong term. I said I'm just made them both. Say the
Yodi.
I'll buy you a big enough crown to need one. Anyway, no. So I think what it is just rubbing by itself may not be an issue, but it's not necessarily a halacha, but scraping can be a halacha.
But don't you scrape a bit when you rub?
Not necessarily, no.
It depends on who you rub with.
You're rubbing one piece against the other, one part of against the other, like that.
So you think you end up scraping when you're rubbing, then it's something you didn't tell us about the positive.
Well, that's what
you know. No, I mean, if you look into the minute things,
you don't look at minute things. Halacha concerns itself with what we see with the naked eye. It doesn't concern itself with microscopic things. All right, look.
Scrubbing.
So scrubbing is something else. That's what we're saying kiss over here. But the scraping is something.
If you scrub something, you discolor it slightly. What do you call that?
I don't know. You call that you did a bad job scrubbing it, I guess, because usually scrubbing you should cleanse something. I don't know. If you actually remove some of the color, you could say that maybe you scraped it. I don't know.
You mean if you scrub a black sheet with a Brillo tag, you're going to get
a garment. Okay.
Garments is another thing. We said before, just water by itself on garments is enough to be kissed. All right, let's carry on. A kibbutz b'makom kodesh. Hold on, we said the washing of these clothes, that dam chatas gara on it, has to be done.
But when it has garments,
that would be a problem. We're talking about pure leather shoes. A kibbutz b'makom kodesh. Hold on, we said that kibbutz of the godim that got dam chatas on them has to be done b'makom kodesh. So the Gemara says Minahan Mili, where do we know that from? The Tana Rabban has to chabit from Makom Kodesh, because the Pasuk says that the clothing has to be washed from Makom Kodesh, so okay, it's clear the back. The question is, though, the Mishnah had also said that the other two things, Shvirat Klei Cheres, just that we have to break Klei Cheres that are used for cooking a chatos or other kodeshim, and I mentioned yesterday, by the way, you have a machlokes that's written in Rashi and the Ramban about that, does it apply only to, we're going to see also in the next Mishnah, But you have a machlokas between Rashi and the Rambam whether the din of shviras klei cheres applies to any klei cheres that applies to a klei cheres that was used to cook any kodshim or only chatos. Rashi learns the first way, the Rambam learns the second way. The Rambam learns that with other korbanos you wouldn't have to do shvira, you would just have to do merito shkita. You just have to cleanse them thoroughly. Anyway, so the Mishnah had said that the shviras klei cheres also has to be done in the Azara, and we said that Mariko Shifa, the cleansing of clay nechoshes, also has to be done in the Azara. So the clothing that has to be washed, the Pasuk clearly says, the Chavit Makom Kodesh. Shvirat Klei Cheres Nayin, and how do we know that the breaking of the Klei Cheres has to be done in the Azara? It's Talmud Loima, therefore the Pasuk says, U Klei Cheres Hashet Tevushal Bar Yishavet. Therefore the Pasuk says, and the Klei Cheres, in which it's cooked, has to be broken, so the Vav attaches it to the previous thing, meaning that the same din applies to it also. Some of the Mephoshim also point out the fact that the previous pasuk ended with the word b'makom kodesh, and the new one begins kli cheres, implies that the kli cheres also has to be b'makom kodesh. Well, not just the fact that b'makom kodesh is immediately followed in the next pasuk by the word kli cheres. Okay.
So what's more important?
It's two different ways of understanding it. Two different ways that Mephoshim have of understanding it. Mariko or Shif of a Klein Choshes Nine. How do we know the same thing applies to the washing and scouring of Klein Choshes? Tam of Lema being the Klein Choshes Bushala, therefore the Pasuk continues, and if in a Klein Choshes it is cooked, or Mordak Bushutra Kamaim, and it has to be cleansed and scoured with water, and again, either the Vav attaches it to the previous thing, or again, we use the Bamakam Kaddish of the previous Pasuk, and attach it to the word, and attach it to the word Klein Choshes. Then we said in the Mishnah, Dech Chomer B'Chasas Pola, that this is a Chomra in Chasas over other Karbonis. And here again, we have this Machoikas between Rashi and the Ramban, where everybody agrees that the business about washing clothing that got dam on it applies only to a chata. We established that at the beginning of the parak. Do we mean that both the thing of breaking clay cheres and the thing about merika and shtipa of clay nechoshes apply only to a chata, which is how the Rambam learns, or is it that when we say dechomer means specifically about the merika or shtipa of the clay nechoshes? So if you want to ask him, only that applies to. Or rather, according to Rashi, the zeh would refer only to the blood, because let me try that again. According to Rashi, that kli cheres does have to be broken, with any kind of korban, then zeh chomer would refer only to the blood. According to the Rambam, it would refer to the blood and the cheres, and the kli cheres. According to the Rambam, both of those things are true only of a chata. So, the Gemara asks, Tulek, you're telling me there are no other chomeres in a chata over other korbanos? What about the fact that you have a type of chatzot where you take blood of it into the heichal? You don't find that by any other carbon. Okay, the answer is chatzoris chatzonis. Fine, the mission is not talking about chatzoris apnimi. It's talking only about chatzoris chatzonis. That you don't bring the blood into the heichal. Okay, the question is, shem nichnas dama lefnai velefnim ktula. Okay, then what about I can find you another formula when it comes to chatzot? Namely, the fact that if you bring the blood of it into the heichal, then the carbon becomes fossil, unlike other carbons. So what is the Mishnah saying? Zeh chomer, implying like this is the only chomer when you have other ones. Okay, the answer is Rabbi Akiva. Fine, our Mishnah could be like Rabbi Akiva. Yama kol dam shenichnasu l'heichal l'chatzos tula. Where we learned before in the page that Rabbi Akiva holds that any korban that the blood of it is brought into the heichal to be mechatzos becomes fossil. So according to him, there's no chomer of a chatzos over any other korban. What about shekei mechatzos or chayvikusis? I can find you another chomer in a chatzos. Another greatness of a chatzos over other korbanos, that it's able to be mechatzos on a thing that would make a person chayav karis. This is the chatzos to shmiyas hakoros. Fine, but I can find you have among the cases where a person brings a chatzos is the case of shavuot ha'edus and shavuot bitteri also, which we learned in shavuot, that a person brings a chatzos, a korban over the yerid for those. Those don't involve karis. A person is be sworn to come and testify and based in and swears that he doesn't know the edus. And later on, he realizes that he did wrong. It's a serious avera, do it with a shavua, but there's no chiyuv karis in it. So not every chatzos involves a chiyuv karis.
Which ones do?
Most of them. A typical chatzos. The ones that doesn't are the ones for the most part that you bring a korban out of the yerid for. Regular fixed chatzos is always for something that's high for me. Okay. Yeah. All right. What about shekain chon abamachonis? What about I can find another chomer in a chatzos over other korbanos? That is the only korban that requires the blood to be placed on four places of the mizbeach. All other korbanos have maximum shein shein aver. A chatzos. The answer is Rabbi Shmuel. Fine, we could say that the commissioner goes according to Rabbi Shmuel, who said before, we learned before in Ezra Maklim, and Dharma called Dharma Maton and Dala Maton, and Dala Maton. He says that all korbanos, you have to have four separate applications. Not on the four corners, but in other words, not really on the four corners, on the four sides. But what he says is, in other words, that unlike what we always learn that you do with most korbanos, Shei Maton and Shein Abba, you dash it against the corner and it goes this way and that. Rabbi Shmuel holds, no, you do one here and one here, near the corner, and one here and one here, near the corner. You don't do it one flash that goes in two directions. So according to him, you also have to have four applications by many other korbanos. What about Zilitai Meich? Fine, the Gemara says, okay, even if you can transfer all these other things, but after all, even according to your logic, or you say Teren, the Dam, or you say Espa, after all, only a chatzos has the blood applied to the corners of the Mizbeach. Only a chatzos has the blood applied using the finger. So it's a choda. What about the fact that the blood has to be applied on the edge of the down the actual corner? So either way, even if you're going to transfer all these other things, you still have. There's obviously other chumris in a chatzos over other korbanos. Ella, no, chav mitzvah plus a chumri nafah. You're right. Even though the Mishnah used the expression zeh chomer, doesn't mean this is the only chomer. It means here's something where you have a chomer in a chatzos over other korbanos. You do have other ones as well, but the Mishnah is not using the word zeh chomer to be exclusive that there's no other chomer of a chatzos over other korbanos. It's just saying that here you have when it comes to the case of the dam and according to the Rambam, also the Kli Cheres, that you have something special in the Chatos over other Korbanos, but it's not the only thing.
And therefore,
and that's it. We had a problem with the wording of the Mishnah. Why is it saying Zechoyer as if this is the only one? The answer is the Mishnah didn't mean to imply it's the only one. The Mishnah just didn't mean to say this and no other. It just meant here is something where you have a Chumrah in a Chatos over other Korbanos. Okay, could have. And Tosfos actually asks if there are some places where the Gemara says that when a mission uses zeh or elu or whatever, it means to be exclusive. But Tosfos discusses that a little bit. One thing is, Tosfos points out that all these other things that we've been discussing over here, that you have such a thing as chatoris hapnimiyus, and that if the blood of a chatos goes into the hayfel, it becomes possible, and so on and so forth, all these are fairly obvious things. Therefore, the Mishnah has no problem using the word zechomer, and you're meant to understand. It's not meaning to mention the obvious differences between a chatos and other korbanos. As opposed to in other places.
It's really exclusive.
No, but that's the point. So it just says, when you have in other places, when the Gemara asks, that what do you mean zeh? The thing is that other things that you're thinking should have been included are less obvious. So the Mishnah should have either said they're included or explicitly that they're included or explicitly that they're not included, as opposed to over here, that a chatos has to have its blood applied to the four corners of the mezeach, and that a chatos, and then a chatos is a chatos, a chayav kisses, and so on and so forth. These are all very obvious things. The Mishnah, the Mishnah can presume that we know that, and therefore can use the word zechomer without it. Okay. Mishnah says,
for instance,
fine, so when the Pasuk says that's different, we're talking about a Mishnah. Okay. Mishnah says, Beget Shiyosa Chutzla Klayim. So now if you have a piece of clothing that's got Dam Chatos on it, so we said you're supposed to wash it in the Azara, what happens if it was taken out of the courtyard of the Mishnah? Nichnas Mechab B'machim Kaddish. You have to bring it back into the Azara. The coin literally means the curtains. We've talked before in Ezra Makom and in other places that the Mishnah often uses the word cloyin to mean the Azara, because in the Mishkan they have cloth. So therefore the terminology was still fine. Okay. So Nichnas Machab said Makom Kaddish, you have to bring the beged back inside the Azara and wash it over there in the Makom Kaddish. What about Nitma Chutzla Koyim? What about if while it was outside of the Azara it became Tomei, and you can't bring a Tomei Beged into the Beit Mikdash? Then what you do is Kodei, first you rip it, which makes it that now it's not Tomei anymore. You rip the clothing. Well, we're going to talk about in the Gemara about the details of that, but yes. In general, you have a rule that any keli that became tomei, if it gets damaged to the point where it's not usable, broken, damaged, whatever, to the point where it's not usable as a keli anymore, then it loses its tumah. So therefore, kodei nichnas mechabtev machom kodesh. We're going to see. Wait. Nichnas mechabtev machom kodesh, and then after you rip it, then you can bring it into the azara and wash it. Another case, kli cheres shiyos bechutz l'tvoyim. Similarly, if you have a freak. If you have a kli cheres that was used to cook a chatos and then it was taken outside the koyim, same thing. If that's the shogrim of Makom Kaddish, you have to bring it back into the Azara and break it over there to be Mekayim.
You break it in the Azara,
that's what we said before, that all these three things, kibbutz and shvira and miritu shvira, all have to be done in the Azara. Nitma chutz l'koyim, what if this kli cheres became tomei while it was outside the Azara? Same thing. Noikvoi, you make a hole in it, which again makes that now it's not makabel tumah anymore, it's not functional. V'nichnas the shogrim, makom kaddish, and then you bring it back into the azara and break it over there to be mekayem.
Wait, hold on a moment. So we're not going to use it again. Just want to be mekayem.
Right.
But the kli cheres that came up.
Yeah.
And became tamei, you'll bring it in.
You have to bring it in to wash it, but because you can't bring a tamei keli into the mikdash, therefore you have to break it first, so now it's not tamei anymore. By the way, achronim. Kli cheres shiyos b'chutz l'koyim, nichnas v'shoyver b'machom kaddish, if it didn't become tamei out there, no problem, you bring it back in. Nichma chutz l'koyim, if it became tamei outside, so it was cooked, the chatos was cooked in it in the Azara, because the chatos has to be eaten in the Azara. Then it was taken out, then it became tomei. What do you do? Nokva, you make a hole in it, the nichnas v'shover, machom kaddish, and then you bring it back in and make a hole. That's what we're going
to
see in the Gemara, how much of a hole. But yes, the basic idea is that if once you have a hole or a damage or whatever that makes it non-functional, then it's not functional. By the way, before Shem asked the question.
No,
because it's not a keli, therefore it's not shabbos. Achronim asked the question, by the way, why don't we just toivel it out there? Why do we have to sort of rip it or break it or whatever? Why don't we just toivel it? And in the case of in the first case of the beged, one of the answers is because then the toveling it is going to remove some of the blood. You have a mitzvah to remove all the blood in the azara. So therefore, you're defeating the purpose if you toveled it outside. Some achronim also want to say it might be a problem with chafitza, but that's less of an issue because daraisa, something is a chafitza only if it covers the majority of the thing and you mask it on it. And here, that wouldn't necessarily be the case. But okay. As far as the other thing, as far as the kli cheres, similar answer because you have to break it. You have to break it in the azara, and therefore you have to make sure that the residue of it wasn't removed outside the azara. Whereas if you tovel it, then the residue is still going to have been removed by the tevila. Either that, or if it's not removed by the tevila, then it's going to be a chafitza. So similarly, klina choshes shiot the chuf l'tloim. Similarly, the klina choshes was taken outside the tloim after it was used to cook a chatas. Nichnas a moker v'shoyf of machan chodesh. Same thing. You bring it back into the azara and then cleanse it and scour it over there. Nit machot v'tloim, if it became chame outside the azara. Same thing. Poichsoy, you make a hole in it. Now, Rashi points out the word poichsoy implies a larger hole than noikvoy by the klikheret. Because by metal keli, a little hole is not going to be enough to make the poich keli. You need a larger hole than to make it non-functional.
Why do you need these two cases?
Because one is klicheres and one is klinachoshes. They're different scenarios.
No.
And we don't necessarily. We have to clarify, and we're going to see also. Choisis has a long discussion about this, as you can see, a Choisis that begins here on Tzadik Dalet and runs on most of Tzadik Hei Amud Aleph. Among the various things that Choisis discusses over here is that the word poichsei over here regarding the metal keli may not mean making a hole in it. Like Rashi says, it may mean turning it inside out. Hammering on it until you turn it inside out, and that would be considered that now it's not the original keli anymore. And then,
turn it inside out?
Yeah. You hammer it down until you hammer it to the point where you turn what was before the outside to the inside and vice versa. So that's Tosis says that's what Tosis means. Apparently you could do it with hammering it. So that's Tosis learns what Tosis means would mean. The nichnas, the work of a shirt of Makom Kodesh, and then again, now it's not Tomei anymore, so now you can go and wash it and cleanse it in the Makom Kodesh. So Ravina asks on this, you're telling me that you have to rip the beged before you bring it in, where it was tameh, you have to rip it in order to make it no longer tameh, and then you bring it in and wash it in the azara. The problem is, what do you mean, kurdish? Beged, Amar Achmana. The Torah says that you have to, that if blood splashes on a beged, then you have to wash in the azara, implying that it still has to be a beged when you're coming to wash it. A lot of beged. Now if it's ripped, it's not a beged anymore. The answer is, in the Shire Beke De Ma Torah. You don't actually rip it completely in half. What you do is you leave an unripped area, the amount for a ma'purus. The ma'purus is a sudder, a scarf or a turban or something. The point is, on a daraisa level, the fact that you rip most of the way through the width of the beged is enough to make that it's not tamei. That's not tamei. Midrabanan, it would still be tamei until it was completely ripped apart. Hello? But midaraisa, here we're talking on a daraisa level, all you need. Now, it's true, you shouldn't be bringing things that are tamei d'rabbanan into the azara either, but here, since you have a mitzvah in the Torah to wash it in the azara, then you don't have a choice. The d'rabbanan are going to have to override their din over here and allow you to bring it in, even though it's tamei d'rabbanan. But at least on a daraisa level, once it was ripped most of the way through, and all you have left is yema peret, then it's not tamei anymore, and therefore now you're able to bring it into the azara and wash it over there. So the major part of what Tosfos discusses over here is a long discussion about the question, why don't we say then we find a concept in other places in the chat that even when you have a beged that got completely ripped, fine, it's not tamei with its original tumah anymore, but it's still tamei for having touched the thing that was tamei. If you have, in other words, if you have a beged that was used for midrash, that for example a zav sat on it, and then later on you rip it, so fine, what you've accomplished is now it's not Tomei Midras, but now it's Tomei Maga Midras. Now it's a Rishon Latruma, because it's touched at the moment when you finished ripping it. It was touching. Correct.
It kept
a certain degree of its Tomei. It's now a Rishon Latruma instead of an Ava Truma. The Tosfos discusses, why shouldn't that be the case? Why shouldn't that be the case over here? The Tosfos discusses there may be, there, there, there may be a difference between here we're talking about that here we're talking about that he started with an actual beged as opposed to those Gemaras we may not be talking about a beged, just about a piece of cloth that hasn't been used as a particular beged, as a particular piece of clothing. So therefore there could be different rules about that. Also, Tosfos discusses over here that maybe what we mean over here is that you don't just rip it in one place, you rip it in many places, you just keep them all attached together. This is what we're going to say, about Maga Midrash would apply if you have it ripped in two pieces and you have one piece still touching the other. Here we have it ripped in so many places, then it wouldn't be an issue. Okay, so we're going to ask, Amy, is that so, that you rip it and you leave Kadema Potus, you leave unripped the width of a scarf? This that we say that if you rip a piece of cloth, then once you rip through most of it, it's tar. Rav Huna says that's only if you didn't leave in it the amount kedema apertus. I was sheer about kedema apertus tibuhavi. But if you did leave kedema apertus, if you left that amount, that would be the width of the scarf, then it's still considered attached and it's still tar. And the answer is midrabbanon, who that concept is only midrabbanon, because the chachamim are concerned you might not end up ripping through most of it. So therefore, the chachamim said, even if you did rip through most of it, you rip through 51%, it's still going to be tameh until you reach the point less than kedem ha'paris. But here we're talking on a daraisa level. My parents will start. I don't know if it says anywhere. It's probably three at the voice, an S three times. So it would be, according to the Rambam, an espa is about 3/4 inch, so 3 esbos would be around 2.5. In thickness, actually, I think that's part of the part. So, it would be like 2.5 inches or so, yeah. Okay. So therefore, it's only dirabonon that's still come in this case in order to allow you to bring it into the Azorah, to be kind of the mitzvah, then we'll allow it. The Avnei Nezer actually points out an interesting idea. He says, for example, we find, let's say, when it comes to the din of shofar, you have a din and a mishnah, which is halacha, that if you have, let's say, the only shofar that you know of is up a tree, for example, or across a river, and the only way to get to it would be to do it. If there's a d'rabbanan, you're not allowed to do it. You won't hear a shofar that Rosh Hashanah. So we see that the Chachamim are upholding their zera, d'rabbanan, even when it prevents you from doing an ifter d'oraisa. Why don't we say the same thing over here? Even when it prevents you from doing a mitzvah d'oraisa, I mean. So why is it different over here? He says one difference is over there, because he says the difference is because over there, it's not that it happens that that's the only shofar you know of, but it's not like a mitzvah you have to hear shofar using dafka, that particular shofar. If there was another shofar available, you could well use that. It so happens there's none, but the mitzvah is not on that shofar. It's not a mitzvah on the chesta of the shofar, it's a mitzvah on the gavra, on the person. As opposed to the point still remains that you can't allow him to take this particular chesta because in order to do his chayvus gavra. As opposed to over here, the mitzvah is on the chesta. The mitzvah is this particular piece of clothing itself has to be taken and washed in the azara. So therefore, you have no choice. The rabbanon have no choice but to allow us to do it, even if it means that you're going to be bringing in something which is also, Doesn't matter whether you found or not. In principle, there could be other shofars around. The fact that it so happens that this is the only shofar doesn't make a difference. It doesn't. The mitzvah
from shofar shofar and the shofar shofar happens to be in the tree, then you would be able to find the tree.
The mitzvah is not to blow with one particular shofar. The mitzvah is to blow with whatever shofar is available. It so happens the only one is up a tree. Tough luck. As opposed to the mitzvah is not over here to walk, to take some random piece of clothing and bring it to that. So when it comes to...
The choice is narrowed to the point where...
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. No, the mitzvah never becomes on the shofar. The mitzvah still remains on the person. The mitzvah still remains on the person. It has nothing to do with this particular shofar.
So
we have in many cases. You have many cases in Torah where you have a distinction between the gavra. You won't hear the shofar. You won't hear the shofar. You have no choice.
You know, you got to prepare better. Don't hear shofar the tree.
This is all. All right, onward. Okay,
please
cheder. Please cheder. Let's continue. kli cheres shiyos. Before we said if a kli cheres was used to cook a chatos and then it was taken out, then you bring it back in. And we said if it became tummy out there, then you have to first make a hole in it and then bring it back in. So the question is, what do you mean? Again, kli amar rachmana. The pasuk says kli cheres, and now that it has a hole in it, it's not a keli anymore. It's not functional. The answer is you don't make that big a hole. Shenika b'sherdesh kum. You only make a hole big enough for a small root of a plant to go out through it. So again, midir abanan, it would still be the kabel truma because you could conceivably use it for something else. You could use it for something that you could use it for food, for example, that won't come out through a small hole like that. But midiraisa, once you have a hole in it that size, then the size of a small root, then already that's enough to make it tahor on a daraisa level. And again, therefore, then now you can bring it into the other. The Rambam, by the way, seems to have a different understanding as far as when we say midrabanan hu, as far as the previous thing and as far as these next two. The Rambam seems to understand that what it is once you rip the beged, or once you made the hole in the kli cheres, really you shouldn't have to bring it in and wash it or break it or whatever at all. Because that already, that's it. It's not a keli anymore. But midrabanan, we're telling you nevertheless, we're going to tell you bring it back in and do mitzvah kibbutz or mitzvah shvila with it. Midaraisa, according to Rambam, it would seem that the meaning is once you did that, then really the mitzvah of kibbutz or the mitzvah of breaking or whatever doesn't really even really apply to it at all. Okay. Then we said clean a choshes kola posted kola. We said a clean a choshes, you bring it back in and you wash and scour it, and if it became tomer, then you make a hole in it first, or according to toasters, you turn it inside out, and then yes. So the question is, the whole last klibu. Again, you have the problem that if you do that, then it's not a keli. And the answer is the rochis mirsafu. And the answer is what you do is after you made the hole, then you bang on it with a hammer to close up the hole. So like this, in other words, because you use a hammer to flatten out to flatten out the metal near the hole so that it closes up the hole again. Clicaris, you can't do that. The clicaris, once you have a hole in it, you can't really fix it. Here you have an option. But we can. But that's not the same thing as fixing it using itself. Here, what we're talking about is you have the keli itself needs to, without anything else attached to it, needs to be brought back in. So therefore, but fine. The point is also with the kli cheres, the difference is we only did a very small hole, not enough to even make it tahor on a derabanan level. Here, with the kli machis, we had to make a big enough hole to make it that it's not even tamei on a derabanan level.
It actually depends
what the purpose of the keli is. You have there's various things. Gemara Rashi refers over here to a Gemara and Shabbos that refers to you have a case of a kli cheres that has a hole in it that a very small hole where liquid goes out of it. So then it's not a kli on one level, but it's still a keli on another level, because you could use it to put olives in it, then if it has a bigger hole, an olive size one, then it's still tummy to a certain extent, and then when it has a hole that pomegranates would fall through, and so forth. You have a few different things. But here with the kli machis, again, you have to make a larger hole. So therefore, again, the answer is, you lost this mirror stuff, the answer is after you made the hole, you hammer on it to close the hole back up, to flatten out the metal enough to close the hole, and now it's a keli again, and now you can bring it into the azara. Again, by the way, midrabanan, you would have a concept called tuma yeshana. Midrabanan, you have a concept that we've learned about.
Oh, when you fix it, it becomes tahar?
Once you broke it, it became tahar. Now, midrabanan...
Once you fix it, it still remains tahar.
Midaraita. Midrabanan, you have a concept called tuma yeshana. That's the Gemara tells us in Shabbos, I think, that the Chachamim in the middle of the Bayis Sheni, in time of Shlemki and Amalka, made a gzera that clay maskos, if they became tummy, even if you completely melted them down and reformed them, they still keep their original truma. But that, again, that's only the rabbanon, on the raisa level, once it has a hole big enough in it that it's no longer a functional keli, that it's tahor, so therefore now we can fix it, make it back into a keli again, and then bring it into the azar. Amar Rish Lakish. Another din in this connection, Rish Lakish says, Me'il Shin Mitma. Now what happens, let's say, you have the Me'il of the Kohen Gadol. If blood of a chasaf gets on it. Now let's say if the blood of chasaf got on it. Okay, that's fine, no problem. You could wash it in the Azara like you would anything else. The problem is, what if it came tomei outside the Azara? So So we can't say we should do with it like what we said in the Mishnah that we're going to rip it and bring it in, because the Me'il, you're not allowed to rip. Lo yikoreh. You have an Isser, it's one of the 613 Mitzvahs that you're not allowed to rip the Me'il. No, it's not, not break it. You know, systems they can't break. There is, by the way, it is true that when it comes to the other big day kohona, there's also an issue to rip them, but the issue is not so much because it says so explicitly by them, but more because lo yisachem came l'Hashem alekeichem in general, you know, to rip anything of kedusha. However, some of the mafarshim say that our Gemara is mentioning meal just because that's the one by which it mentions specifically about ripping it, but in fact the same din that we're going to say now would apply to the other begadim as well. Some others say that not necessarily, because with the other begadim, if you rip them in order to fix them, or in this case, you're doing it in order to be metaher them, so that you can bring them into the azara, then that's okay, as opposed to the me'il, it's an outright thing. You're never allowed to rip it for any purpose, therefore we have to figure out what we're going to do with it over here, given that you can't rip it, but on the other hand, you can't bring it back into the azara topic. Incidentally, by the way, worth mentioning, you know, if Chas V'Shalom Mashiach doesn't come in the next couple of days, then on Sunday we're going to be sitting in the same kinnis. In one of the kinnis, there's actually a line behind Me'il kinikrat tefila, that the Jewish people mourn when they saw how the Me'il was ripped. So the thing, the pasuk says that when the Beis Mikdash was destroyed, when the Romans grabbed everything they could get their hands on, yeah. So the point is, yeah, the kinnis says ripped, not Me'il kinikrat tefila. So the point is, you have a specific mitzvah in the Torah, lo yikoreh, the me'il is not allowed to be ripped, and here you have that happens. Megayim, okay. So me'il shenitma, me'il shenitma, so now if the me'il became tomei, so again, you can't rip it, what do? Machnise b'pachas mishalosh al shalosh, what you do is, you bring a tiny bit of it into the azara at a time. You bring in a little part of it. You bunch it up. You bring in a tiny little part of it, less than 3 by 3 etbars, which is the minimum to be considered a beged. You bring that in, and then you wash it, and then you do the same thing with the next part, etc. Until piece by piece, you wash the whole area. Mishum shenema, why you cut it? Because the pasuk says by the meal, you're not allowed to rip it. So therefore, that's the only way to do it. So they do. And the answer is, because with other things, at least you have an alternative. Because ideally, in fact, Tosfos mentions over here, that really, bia b'mikdash shmo bia. Actually, Tosfos begins by mentioning like this. You have an opinion, which we've learned earlier in our Masechta, that bia b'mikdash shmo bia. That if, for example, a tamei person would stick some body part into the azara, he'd be chayev also as if he completely came in. So in that case, the same thing would apply to a part of a beggar tamei over here. So Tosfos says, okay, with a beged tomei, the difference is because you could conceivably cut off the part, that went into the azara, maybe it wouldn't be considered bia. But the point is also other reports. What do you mean, how can it be possible? What do you mean? You can have a tomei person stick their finger into the azara. The beged, same idea. You can have that. So you take the beged and you put your hand by the door. And, No, they don't walk. We're not talking about that. The Kohen Gadol will take off the meal. They'll wear a different one, or wear a spare one, and they'll take the meal, and then and stick a tiny bit of it in. And
I think an example that even in the Beis Din Arabi,
if you stick your fingers in, then you may. Yeah, there is that. Because if there's a possibility that a person might be a zob or what have you, then you have an issue with that, yeah. Because the coastal knew is the wall of the Harabayas, and a zob is not allowed to go into the Harabayas. Yeah, but it's still a wall. That's the point. Though you have different posts that take different views on this. But one possibility is that beginning from the outside surface of the wall is the beginning of the Harabai.
So if you've ever stuck a note in the wall, you could be in big trouble.
Well, so sticking a note, I mean, you're not really sticking your fingers in, but I think most of the posts are maple on it. So your average person is not a zob or what have you. But. That's true, but the mikveh doesn't help if a person never became a zod in his mind. Okay. Anyway, the point is that the Arizal mikveh is mind. That's true. Okay. Anyway, onward. The, point is also, as I say, that, you know, it's one thing with the me'il. You have no choice. You can't rip it, therefore you're going to do like this. But when it comes to other begadim, you have the option. You can rip them. For better, you should do that rather than use the heter of bringing in smaller amounts. Most of Rav Adabra Abba asks on this, why do you need only, what do you mean that you do less than 3 by 3? A Mishnah says, ha'avim v'ha'rakim, thicker cloth, or felt, or harakim actually says means felt. In behen, mishum sholosh al sholosh, with them, the concept of sholosh al sholosh does not apply. The concept that a piece of cloth is considered a beggar, and the Kabbal Chumah, if it says little as 3 by 3 etzbos, only applies to regular cloth, because you could conceivably use it for a patch for clothing. As opposed to thick cloth, you wouldn't do that. You can't really use it as a patch. Felt, you can't really use it as a patch. Therefore, with them, you have a least, not really. A patch for clothing. If a person's clothing has a hole in it, you could put a patch. Fine, you could use it for a patch for a hat, but you couldn't really use it for a patch for clothing. The point is, Sholosh is usable as a patch for cloth. So therefore, when it comes to thick cloth or felt, then you need, in order for them to be makabel chumah, needs to be shlosha al shlosha. That's the 3 by 3 tefachim. It's 3 by 3 tefachim being the minimum that you can use to sit on it. Because then you could use these to sit on So instead of 3 by 3 etzbos, which would be like 2.5 inches, you're talking 3 by 3 tefachim, which is like 10 inches or so. So the point is, why do you need to bring in only less than 3 by 3 etzbos? The me'il is thick cloth, because the me'il is woven from a 12-ply woolen thread, so therefore you should be able to bring in up to 3 by 3 tefachim. The answer is agra bihan kashim. The question is, why are you telling me you can only bring 3 by 3 etzbos, less than 3 by 3 etzbos, of the meal in at a time in order to wash it? You should be able to bring it up to 3 by 3 tefachim, because it's thick cloth. And thick cloth is not a kabbal tumah, less than that. The answer is agra bihan kashim. The answer is fine. An independent piece of thick cloth, yes, needs to be 3 by 3 tefachim. But here you're talking about it's attached to a beggar that's attached to the meal, which has its own kashivos, then 3 by 3 etzbos is enough to be choshuv because it's attached there. So therefore, 3 by 3 area would already be something that can become tameh on its own, and therefore, again, since you can't rip it from the me'il, therefore you have to bring in less than that amount at a time in order to wash it. Okay. So now another question. V'haboy shiva sanman. The question is, so Rashi learns that the question that we're asking now is actually a more general question. We're saying all this time that you need to take a beged that got dam chatas on it, and you need to wash it in the azara. The question is, the Mishnah tells us in Nidah that when you have a blood stain on, the case is over there, you have a stain on a garment, which might be a blood stain from a Nidah, or it might be dye or something, you have to cleanse it. It could be dye, like that, right? Okay, no, it could be dye. It could be red dye. So what you have to do is you have to wash it with 7 different chemicals, and then if it goes away then you know that it was blood, because these chemicals are capable of removing blood but not dye. But if you, on the other hand, we might talk about elsewhere, if you soap on it, then even if it was dye, it'll be removed. Nowadays they have dyes that are resistant to soap, but in those days it was all natural stuff, so it's all right. So the point is, so Rashi says, the question is going back to the Mishnah. You're telling me you have to do kibbutz on blood, but that means you have to use a shiva sammanim, and we know that. That when it comes to dam chatas, and also when it comes to maris negoyim, when the Torah tells us that you have a case where you have saras on clothing, and the Torah tells us that you have to wash it and see whether the saras goes away or dims or whatever, so then also the washing there means that you have to use the 7 sammanim. And the problem is the tanya. And now one of the shiva sammanim that are listed over there in Nidah, Rashi gives the whole list over here. The second one on the list is Meir Adlayim. And the tanya, and we learn in a braisa, which we say every day in davening, El Shein Machnitin Meir Adlayim in the Mishnah. So you can't bring Meir Adlayim into the Mishnah. It's now covered. So then how are you able to do the kibbutz over here in the Azara if it requires Meir Adlayim? By the way, Meir Adlayim, What? They're made of lime. There's a powerful chemical that's able to clean. In the case in the braisa that we say every day in Peter Maturus, it's in order to clean the superlum. If I learn better, grind you up and long. I never heard of such a thing. The Gemara tells us at the end of Avodah Zarah, which we learned a while back, that if you stick it 10 times into hard ground a night, then you can near spakaka, then you can use it for, then you can use it for cold and not sharp food. Okay. Anyway, let's go on. By the way, though, with that said, by the way, there are Mephoshim who explain that Merag Lyim over here and also in Pitta Makaris does not necessarily mean urine. They talk about it may mean water from the Raglayim spring. You have it as a spring in the Jewish line called Ein Royo. And then there's some kind of mineral water that would have cleansing properties. In that case, the reason why you can't bring it into the mikvah is not because it itself is urine, which would be, because it has the same name as urine, because when people hear you saying, I'm going to bring Merag Lyim into the mikvah, that should be disrespectful. Anyway, so according to that way, it's not necessarily the thing. Anyway, so again, Rashi learns that the question is on the Mishnah. Toisvah says the question is not on the Mishnah. The question is on this that Rish Lakish just said about the Mi'il. Because the point is like this. With other kinds of clothing, big deal. You don't have to use a shiva thumb line. You can instead use soap on them. And if the soap removes the dye, big deal. So okay, you'll dye it again afterwards. When it comes to the Mi'il, which Rish Lakish was just saying, you have to bring less than 3 boys in at a time, it has to be dyed blue, it's blue dyed wool, and soap would remove the dye. So therefore you can't use soap. Of necessity, you have to use the Shiva Sammanin. Now the question becomes, how are you using the Shiva Sammanin if one of them is made out of lime? The Chitema, the Gemara continues, so you're going to think to say, the Mavla Lahu Bahadi Shiva Sammanin, maybe what you do is fine, you mix the Merag Lion together with the other seven, with the rest of the seven ingredients, or Ma'avla Lahu Lakulu Kachad, and then you apply them to the stain all at once. Ten. Vahatnan, we learn in that Mishnah in Nika, Heviram Shalot Sidron, if you apply the agents, the chemicals, out of order, they're listed in an exact order in the Mishnah. You have Roit Tuffle, which we'll talk about in a second what that is, and Merag Lyim, and Neser, and Burdus, and so forth. They have to be done exactly in that order. So if you do them out of order, or Shehevah Shvatan Te'echad, or if you did all seven of them at the same time, Loy also like one, then it doesn't count for anything. You have to do it sequentially. Again, in Nida, in the Mishnah in Nida, the context is over there, you have a beged that has a stain on it. You don't know if that stain is Dam Nida, in which case the beged is Tomei and the woman is Tomei, or not. So therefore you use the Shiva Sammanin on it and you see what happens. If you see that the stain went away, then you know that it was blood, and therefore she's Tomei Nida, and the beged was Tomei, and if not, then not. So you have Roit Tuffle, which the Gemara explains over there means saliva from a person who, right after they woke up, before they ate, before they talked, the saliva is very potent. It has a lot of enzymes in it, so that's the first. Second one is Merag Lyim, which again might mean urine, or it might mean water from the Roit Tuffle spring or whatever.
Urine
or water from the Roit Tuffle spring.
Why don't you
get me so close? No, because maybe that second one could be more. Yeah. Could be. All right, anyway, so that's the Roit Tuffle and Merag Lyim. Okay. Number three is Neser, which is a... Number three is Neser, which is a type of salt, Neser. It's just called natural, a type of salty earth or something. The fourth one is Burdus, is an extract from a plant. Burdus is similar to Burdus Kashin, a lye or something like that. Burdus Kashin is lye from Kashin, in the name of a place called Kashin. The next one is Ahol, is aloe. The Kmunya is some other kind of earth. And Eshlag, which is, as Gemara describes, is something that you get from the crevices where you find pearls. So either it means some kind of extract from oysters, or it means some kind of extract from under the sea. whatever it is, those are the seven ingredients. The point is they have to be done sequentially. So you can't mix Meirach Lion with the other ones and put them all together. Okay, so you're going to answer that maybe what you do is you mix the Meirach Lion with one of the ingredients, and that way at least you don't have it getting in. And then, right. The problem is, the Mishnah says over there that after you apply each of the agents, each of the chemicals, you have to do kiskus again. Here we're back to kiskus. You have to rub the cloth against itself three times for each one. So therefore, again, you have to do them individually. You have to do the roik tofel individually and the meirag line individually and so forth. And again, you're back to the problem. You can't bring the meirag line into the best mikdash. I'm saying, yeah. So no, the answer is what you can do is you can include the Meirag Lion together with the Roik Tuffel. The Amar Shlokish, Roik Tuffel, Sarf Shehayim Kalachabacha, because the Shlokish says that actually Roik Tuffel, the first one on the list, again the saliva from first thing in the morning, that has to be included with each of the other ones. In other words, first you have Roik Tuffel by itself, that's ingredient number one. Then the Shlokish is saying ingredient number two is a mixture of Roik Tuffel and Meirag Lion. And ingredient number three, step number three, is a mixture of roik tofel and nectar and so forth. So each one, you have roik tofel with it, so therefore you can include the meirag lion. The meirag lion is anyway getting included with roik tofel, so then it's not such a problem to bring it into the mismikdash. Then it's not a lack of cover to the mismikdash to bring it in. When it's mixed. With that said, the Rambam understands differently, so either the Rambam understood all Gemara differently, or the Rambam may have understood, I think the Rabbaz says that the Rambam may have understood that our Gemara is just trying to answer how you, the Makshim, would figure out, but in fact, the Rambam paskins that in this case, you actually don't have to use all seven ingredients, you use only six of them. You use Meirag Lion, and then you skip, you use Roik Tuffel on the stain, and then you skip, and then you skip Meirag Lion and go to the third one next there and continue from there.
The
explanation that we have in the Gemara is that you mix Meirag Lion together with Roik Tuffel, which you would have to do anyway. But then I'm understand more straightforwardly, you don't even have to do that. Just don't use Meirag Lion in the state. How
do you
Meirag Lion? It's like you said before, it's ammonia. It has it's a very powerful cleansing agent.
It is ammonia?
Well, urine itself has ammonia.
Okay, whatever.
The point is it has powerful. The point is it has.
I said a similar characteristic to ammonia. Ammonia is a chemical. It's a very toxic chemical.
Fine, whatever. We're not here to have a chemistry class. The point is that urine is a very powerful cleansing thing, and in some places in the world, Ada Yemazet they use it for that. Onward. Mishnah says, Echad Shabishal Bar, this that would say that these rules apply, these rules as far as Caleb apply, whether you cooked in the Caleb, the Echad She'ira L'Seicha Reseach, or whether you just poured hot food from a carbon into it. There's also a machlokas showing him whether this line echad shabishal bar refers, does it refer both to the kli cheres and the klina koshes, or does it maybe only refer to the kli cheres? Echad kodshei akodshim ve'echad kodshim talim to'unin miritul shtifa. Whether the korban was kodshei kodshim or kodshim talim, either way, if it was a metal keli, you have to do miritul shtifa after you cooked in it. Again, because it absorbed taste from the thing, and now you have to clean it out. Both Reb Shimon Omer, Kodshim Kalam, Antoine, and Miracle Shkipper. Reb Shimon says, no, Kodshim Kalam, don't need that, only Kodshim. We learned a few days ago, we said that Reb Shimon learned that Reb Shimon had a limud from the word from the Pasuk, that he said that it doesn't even apply to Kodshim Kalam, since the Pasuk only mentions it in connection with Chatos, and therefore he said that automatically means it doesn't even apply to Truma, whereas we said Reb Akiva over there says that you need a separate Pasuk to teach us that it doesn't apply to Truma, because that doesn't matter to apply to other Kodshim. The pasuk says that an earthenware keli or metal keli that was used to cook in, so ain't the other shabishal boy. So you would only know from that this rule applies only if you actually cooked in it. How do we know also if you poured boiling food into it that the same thing would apply? If you poured boiling food into it, so he cooked it in another pot and then poured it into this one. How do we know the same thing applies? Therefore, the pasuk says that what it was cooked in it should be broken. Which means, in other words, that basically what we do is, because it says boy, because it says boy and yishover next to each other, instead of it could just say, imbechlina choshes to bushal yishover, so therefore, boy, if there's something cooked in it that was absorbed into it, yishover, then it still has to be broken. Even though it wasn't actually cooked in there because it's boy, because it's in it. What do you mean, how much? The fact is that there's, because boiling food is poured into it. Now,
how much food does
that have to be? Doesn't say. Now, Tosfos does get into a long discussion over here about the general question: when you pour something from a kli rishon, is that considered the equivalent of a kli rishon once poured out of the container?
Eerie
in a kli rishon. That's the point. It comes up in Hilchos Shabbos. It comes up in the halachas of kashering. It comes up in
you.
If you pour from a kli rishon into something else, is that considered cooking? For example, it would be relevant as far as Hilchos Shabbos. If you have soup from a pot, for example, and you pour it into a, you're pouring from the samovar onto the coffee grounds or whatever in your cup, is that considered dishal or not? The Tosfos has a long discussion about all the pros and cons. A cleavishon, you know, it reached at least Yad Shaladis by. If it didn't reach Yad Shaladis by, then it's not a cleavishon anyway.
Right.
We're talking about a cleavishon that was directly on the fire, and now you're pouring from it onto something else. So if you put something in a cleavishon, there's no question it's cooking. But if you pour it from the cleavishon onto something else, is that considered dishal? So Tosfos had a long discussion about all the pros and cons of it. And the upshot is, it really is, it's a machlokas rishonim, and there's no final decision on it. So therefore, in different cases, we have to be machmer, as the case may be. When it comes to Hilchos Shabbos, therefore, you can't pour from a samovar directly onto coffee grounds or whatever. Because
you think that otherwise, I mean, if you pour into the kli rishon, it's called dishal. But if you cook
in the kli rishon, it's dishal. You were talking about you're pouring from the kli rishon. Okay.
So the kli rishon is the hot water. You take the creation from the fire and you put something into it.
No, you pour from it into something else. You take the samovar, you open up the spigot, you open up the faucet, you put the cup under there, you put coffee grounds in the cup, and you pour from the samovar into that. Is that considered dishal or not? That's the question.
If you put the grains of coffee into samovar,
then there's no question it's dishal.
So why the other way around?
Because now it's not in the kli rishon anymore. Maybe it doesn't partake. The main reason why a kli rishon is mevashal is because it's on the fire and the material of the pot itself became very hot. When you pour out of it, maybe it's not as hot as it may be almost as hot, but we're not dealing with measuring the actual temperature. We're dealing with what is it's not a temperature.
You take it off the fire,
okay.
And then you pour it.
So what is the problem? It's not a temperature issue.
Is it considered dishal or not? If it's not an clear issue.
What makes it dishal? The pay or the temperature?
That's. Is it still considered to have the same status as the keli that it came out of or not? Do we consider that it's only considered dishal as long as it's in the original keli that was on the fire, but once it's not, then it's not dishal anymore? Or do we say that regardless, when you're pouring it out of that cleavishon, it still is considered cooking? So again, it's relevant as far as this, it's relevant as far as kashering, can you kasher something using iru? Yeah, so
says that the walls of the cliche are cooling it down.
Yeah, that also is pouring. Yeah. So you pour it down. The point is, it's not that it immediately cools down, but the point is, the walls...
There's no temperature, but the Rambam, it might not be.
Yeah. So, I just mentioned that Machlok is showing him on this topic. So anyway, our Gemara, which mentions Ira, but Seicha Reseach is very relevant to that, which is why Tosfos has this long discussion about it. All right, let's go on. So anyway, because the Pasuk says, boy yishover, that is in it, meaning that it absorbs, it has to be broken, and that means even if it only absorbs. Boy Rami Bachama, so now Rami Bachama has a question. Shloi ba'avir tanur ma'u. What would happen if you take a spit that you have a chapa on, and you roast it in the oven? So it's not actually touching the oven. It's just suspended in. Would that oven be one of the case of this klicheres that now has to be broken? The question is now, abishul ubilua hu dekoped rachmana, is the Torah masbid only if something was actually cooked in the klicheres and that it absorbs? Ojuma abishul b'lo bilua. Or even if you cooked it in the klicheres, so in this case roasted it inside the klicheres, even though it wasn't actually b'leia, even though it didn't actually absorb anything. Now, Shita Mukabekas adds the detail that what about you have juices from it are going to drip down into the oven. But okay, there you have the wood or the coals or whatever, they're going to get burnt up right away. The oven is not going to absorb them. But the question is only that here you have, the oven was used, the chatas was cooked, roasted inside it, but it didn't actually, wasn't belaya anything, it didn't absorb anything. Amar Rabba, Toshma, the Rabba says, I'll show you from our Mishnah. We said, Echad Shabishal Boy, the Echad Shiru will say, Sereteach. We said in the Mishnah that whether you cooked in a keli or you poured hot liquid into it, which in the second case, you have it absorbed without being cooked in there. And yet the Mishnah is saying that you have to break it. So we see that even if you have only one factor without the other, then you still have the third, still says you have to break it. Okay, the answer is, the Ramah Macham answers, but below a village issue, blood come and boil on. I don't have a question. Obviously, if it absorbs even without it being cooked in there, then there's no question you have to break it, because that's what the Mishnah is saying. If you come and boil on, Bishop will let you lure. My question is the other way around, if it was cooked in there, but it didn't absorb. So over here, you roasted it inside an oven without the oven actually. What do you mean, theoretical? You just said you have a spit with a chatas on it that's hanging in the oven over there. So it's getting roasted inside the oven, but the oven doesn't actually absorb anything from it because the oven doesn't touch it. The spit that it's on is going to absorb from it, of course, but the oven's not going to absorb anything from it.
I mean, it doesn't boil, but if it's heated very, very high temperature in the oven, even though it's on the spit, the walls are going to absorb some of it.
But not in a way that's considered to be bilua. Bilua implies that it absorbed it directly. The answer is, and that's true in principle. You have Rishonim, as I understand, who say that you could technically cook milk with inflation in the same oven together. And in fact, you also have, for example, if you have one pot next to the other, that one pot doesn't absorb from the other.
If you had a tray piece of food on a spit, you would say that the oven absorbs the walls of the oven absorb that trace of food. You're going to taste. So why would you say
Not necessarily. It's more of a problem if it touches it. It's not necessarily if it's a problem if it's just in that area. So the Gemara says Mai, so what would be the game? Toshma, the Omer of Nachman, Omer of Ravor. Tanner shall mikdash shall matchify. Rav Nachman says that the oven that they had in the Beis Mikdash was made out of metal. Now the pashtus, why would they have made it out of metal? Because they were always cooking kodesh in it, and they didn't want to have to break it every time. So therefore, be talked about a visual copied. If you're going to tell me that there's no problem when it's cooked in there without absorbing, so why not to make it out of metal? Ne'evet shocheres, make it out of earthenware, and there's no problem.
That proves
l'chora that even in the state you would have to break it, and that's why they made it out of metal instead. However, the Gemara says, no, given the ikka shiori menachas, since you have the leftovers of menachas that Kohenim are going to eat, the yosin, the tanner, where those have to be baked in the oven, the ikka bishul will be lua, and there, when you're baking bread in an oven, you stick in those times, you stuck it onto the side of the oven, so there it directly absorbs, and a mincha contains flour and oil, so definitely relay out from the oil.
It touches the wall.
It's actually stuck onto the wall, yeah. So therefore, for that purpose, they have to make it out of metal, because otherwise they'd have had to break it every time after they baked menachos in there. But as far as the case, where you're hanging it on a spit, not necessarily. Right. Again, by the way, according to the Rambam, this whole thing only applies to a chatas. The question is, then why is the Gemara mentioning a mincha, where a mincha is not a chatas? And if you're going to say it's talking about mincha choyte, if you're going to say it's talking about mincha choyte, that doesn't contain oil. So one answer is that it might be berleia even without oil, because it is stuck to the side. The other answer is we might be talking about the mincha that comes along with the korbanos of a mitzvah, which is similar in that sense to a chatas, and that does contain flour and oil.
Now, when it's roasted very high temperature, you know, there's
so you have something, okay, so you have something called zeya, you have steam.
Zeya.
Steam from the food, where there, to a certain extent there can be a certain amount of issue with the steam that comes from the food that gets absorbed and then will come in the next thing in the wall. That's the problem, for example, in eating a food in a tray for microwave. But here we're talking about bilua means more than just zeya. It means absorbing. Bilua would mean actually absorbing actual substance as opposed to just steam. So then that's
conceivably understand that there is some degree of absorption.
But not really. We're saying over here that there isn't, at least not to the extent that would be considered Bilula. There would be Zeya, but there wouldn't be Bilula.
Depends on the temperature.
It depends on the definition in Halacha. It depends on the definition in Halacha. The definition of Bilula is direct contact. Because that's the definition of Bilua, means absorbing.
Not contact.
If it's not contact, then it's Zeya. That's a different topic.
Okay, so you're saying Bilua is contact.
Bilua means contact, yes.
Okay,
Okay. So Zeya
is...
So Zeya, then it's a different category, right.
It would be included in that discussion.
Right.
Okay. That's interesting.
Right.